He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And I would like to start off this week by discussing something I don't like to discuss, which is industry woes, but I'll be brief as I can. It looks like this global chip shortage is increasing problems, not decreasing as you move through 2021. It's going to impact dealers more than customers, maybe. And it's interesting that all the truck manufacturers now have got either stoppages of some plant operations or have adjusted the way they're going to build a pickup truck to get through their problems with chip shortages, which are raging all over. Industry-wide in the U.S., there's a statistic out that says over 440,000 vehicles are going to be lost in production to the chip shortage for this, I don't know if it's a calendar year or model year. Globally, it's over 1.1 million affected. So there are a lot of vehicles on the lots for sale, but there are going to be some inconveniences. But the latest thing in the automotive industry as far as recalls and or problems has been outlined by Ford stopping the production of and sales of home chargers, which cost an owner, a buyer of an electric vehicle, $799 to install on average. That's in the article. And apparently there's a defect in some of the chargers, so Ford has got a recall out or a stop sale order out so that you can't buy a Ford-badged charger if you go and buy, for example, a Ford E-Mustang, for just an example. It's going to go to anybody who buys and wants to buy a Ford electric vehicle. So that's this week's problems that came to light in some of the latest articles I was reading before we went on.
So are there any solutions, or is this just a problem?
It's a technical problem with the Ford chargers. There's something in there that's apparently not making them operate properly.
No, Ford is recommending you go on Amazon and buy chargers on Amazon. That's the solution.
Well, that's what people may do anyway.
And I find it pretty pathetic that a legacy automaker like Ford is, yet again, when launching a new critical to their future vehicle, they managed to botch it up yet again. Now, mind you, GM is doing no better, recalling about 94,000 full-size SUVs. The new Cadillac Escalades, Suburbans, and GMC Yukons, Tahoes, which are basically all the same, you know, same chassis, same vehicle, with problems, seat belt issues on the third row seat. They've been building seat belts for 50 years, and yet, I guess the seat belts get stuck in the mechanism of the third seat when folding or unfolding it. And it can damage the seatbelt, which obviously would not be a good thing. Again, extremely expensive, kind of ridiculous in my mind. I don't see how this can still happen with these manufacturers, but hey, it is what it is.
Well, some of these recalls, you know, manufacturers do a lot of road pre-sale testing of new vehicles all the time. I do not know how manufacturers test for proper seatbelt usage. Usually some of these recalls start coming out after they've had public use problems that get reported back to them. I don't know whether they fill their vehicles with third row seats with people and drive around a million miles of road testing to find out that a seatbelt doesn't work properly or not. But Jay's right. You'd think after building seatbelt systems for over 50 years that there would not be a problem in 2021. But to that end, we now have Audi recalling over 100,000 A3 sedans dating back to, I believe, 2015 or 16 for a problem with a sensor that detects whether or not the front seat passenger is indeed in the seat or not. And that could affect whether the airbags went off in an accident, if the sensor detected that there was no passenger in the seatbelt, they had an issue, they had a crash, and the passenger's airbag did not go off. So these problems keep coming. When you think about all the the technology that's going into the new cars, surrounding chips, which run everything from gasoline motors, windshield wiper motors, and all that now, instead of mechanical linkages, even though there's a mechanical linkage, but they're run by computers. It's probably not too surprising, but it is annoying. And with that, we will go on. Jay, what do you have to say?
Well, I think there are just a few cool cars I would like to drive that I most likely will end up not driving. For those of us who love wagons, and if you have close to $100,000 to spend, which is not my case, the new Audi RS6 wagon, or Avant as Audi calls it, seems to be in hot demand, and so much so that Canadian dealers are selling them across the border. So I'm not sure these vehicles qualify as gray market cars because they are going through U.S. dealerships. But there is a low supply of these very high-end, very powerful, close to 600 horsepower V8 turbocharged wagons. And for those of us who like wagons, love wagons, it's still cool to see them out there.
But as you have
also
said,
also looking forward, I don't know if I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, we're talking about the electric vehicle market, and I thought Mercedes-Benz was a little slow coming to market, but we're finally getting a little more information on the Mercedes-Benz EQ, and one of the surprising features is the car will be available at some trim levels with a 50-inch wide screen. So the whole dashboard is just one gigantic screen.
Presumably compartmentalized for driver use on the left-hand side of left-hand drive cars and maybe passenger use on the right-hand side, Jay?
Yeah, and I'm sure you're not. It's not meant to watch the latest
movie
episodes of whatever show on Netflix or Zulu, but it's just interesting. It's cool. We'll see. We'll see, I look forward to seeing that come to market.
Yeah. Well,
Volkswagen's ID Buzz, BUZZ, which is like a modern version of the microbus of the 1960s and 70s. Which is coming on the electric platform sometime around 2023, 2024. So it's not the next vehicle in line in Volkswagen's electric vehicles, but sooner or later it will make it to market here. It'll be coming to the European markets in 2021 or 2022, and with an important percentage of those vehicles being strictly utility. Utility vans, and again, I think there is there's going to be a change in the commercial vehicles market in delivery vans, the last mile delivery vans or small vans, the equivalent of what we have now, like the Ford Transit Connect and the little Dodge or Ram van, but an electric version of that is certainly something that will be appealing to. A lot of either contractors, commercial delivery guys, and so forth. And to that effect, I thought it was interesting to see this British startup called Arrival setting up a plant in North Carolina and has a contract to build, I think, 10,000 utility delivery vehicles for UPS. Along with Rivian, that has a contract, I think, for somewhere around 100,000 vehicles for Amazon, and the post office, the USPS, just awarded a contract to, and I forget now if it was Grumman or one of the other aerospace manufacturers, to build a good old internal combustion engine delivery vehicle. I thought this British startup Arrival was an interesting case and something to follow.
All right, and what was its name again?
Arrival.
And that's for combustion engine, Jay, you said?
No, that's electric, fully electric.
Yeah, but the other UPS.
The USPS delivery vehicle, which is to span over 20 years of a life expectancy, is still going to be a gasoline-powered vehicle, I think, with the option to convert them to electric power.
I think that's what I wanted to bring up, because I read that article also. They're going to be able to be dual production vehicles for electric or combustion engines, or if the combustion engines really go out, yes, the conversion should be easy without having to replace the whole chassis.
And one thing, this is a mild digression, but something about your the screen thing, Jay?
Oh, the screen across the dashboard is what you're talking about.
Sorry to call it the thing, guys, but the screen across the dashboard brings me to what I thought brings me to my trip to work this morning.
Okay.
Over a simple country lane with a truck that, no, not quickly at all, Jay, you would have been miserable, because it was kind of a truck that was kind of lost and kind of jerking along at about 4 miles an hour. Maybe I exaggerate slightly. And it occurred to me that he had to be on his screen or his GPS trying to figure out where he was, which brought me to a longing, a nostalgic yearning for people who actually kind of looked out the window and thought they might know where they were in the physical universe.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen quickly. But the GPS situation I will comment quickly on is that GPSs out in rural areas do not often have the numbers that they show that you've put in for the addresses to be applicably reliable to the actual location of the driveways. And my home in Sharon, Connecticut, is an example. It is listed on the postal department as a town as 28, number 28 on the road. And the GPS says that that is not an accurate location of it. And I believe that I have thus received some errant deliveries of some parcels that have come in my driveway thinking they were at, let's say, 54 of the same road instead of 28. And I have to go down the road and deliver them a day or so after I find them here. That's the problem of GPSs. I wanted to go back, I think, to the electric Jay's comment, and I'm trying to chase it in my head. On the trucks, I think the trucks have a much more appropriate use for electric motors in them for delivery vehicles than cars do, if only because the chassis are mostly larger and they can fit a larger battery pack underneath the floor, so to speak, where the most battery packs are located. So they will have a range. I doubt electric UPS vehicles will be appropriate if they have to come out from Waterbury to the northwest corner before they start deliveries, because that's a 45-mile trip each way. And unless they have delivery ranges or battery ranges of over 200 miles, by the time they go around these meandering country roads, sometimes 5 miles between stops and up and down hills and all that kind of thing, unless they have battery ranges in these delivery vans, chassis that can go 200 to 300 miles, it's going to be hard for the rural areas to have delivery vans of electric nature running around, and combustion engines are going to have to be around for a while.
I think they will. I think that's not a problem.
It's more of a problem than you're getting.
You just mentioned that if the chassis is designed from the get-go to accommodate a battery pack that's large enough, it should not be a problem. The delivery vans that are now in the market, mostly in Europe, the Mercedes Sprinter and I think the Ford Transit both have an electric version. Actually, the Ford Transit is coming to this market this year with an electric version. They are limited to, I think, about 100 miles. But again, remember, they were not designed to be electric vehicles. So I think the packaging of batteries is probably a little more difficult on existing vehicles. But on new vehicles, it shouldn't be a problem.
Right. On the battery charge situation, which is still an issue for some types of uses of electric vehicles. I saw a headline in one of my automotive magazines that there may be a 5-minute battery charge technology on the horizon. The horizon may be 5 to 10 years out, but it comes from an Israeli company who is trying to overcome the primary reason for long charge requirements on batteries, which I will not go into here. Listeners don't want to know about it. But if they actually get to a point of a 5-minute battery charge, it gives you significant extension of the range for vehicles that are needing that range on a daily basis. That would be a big breakthrough if it got through the whole industry, but it would be a rollout, and it would be a long time before conversions of now charging stations that require 30 minutes to give you anywhere from 80 to 100 miles of extension. The Tesla superchargers may be a little faster, but you do have only a certain number of electric charging stations out there, although a lot more are going to come into play, but it's still a problem. The time of recharging is still going to be block a lot of people from going electric as quickly as the industry would like to see them being willing to do so.
I guess if it is affordable for one, I think about the difference between practical, you know, there's a practicality issue around that, and then there are people who can afford it that aren't terribly used to waiting for anything.
Correct.
She said, trying to be diplomatic. So I've never personally understood how that works. How you say somebody who's used to having something delivered snap, that they have to wait for 25 minutes to just have enough juice to go the next route, has never made any particular sense to me. But Jay, maybe you can help me with that.
No, but I think we're really.
So that is just something that will be improved along the way.
The range thing over and over and over again. I think most people don't drive 200 or 300 miles a day, period. And I keep saying the people who buy an electric car usually have two cars. So
And that's not where I'm going with this.
That's not the issue here. It's not one or two cars. It's just people getting used to electric cars. And it's fine if you got two cars. Yes, you choose your gas car to go 300 miles.
Right.
A
yeah.
I'm sorry.
The problem of waiting is a big issue. The
point is that
people don't like to wait, and I found somebody sleeping in their Tesla at a Tesla charging station in Waterbury a couple of months ago. I don't know how long they've been sleeping beyond the charge or whether the car was all charged up, but he'd all gone to sleep.
Well, you know, if Marshall, there are people who are happy to take a power nap.
I'm not sure whether he did that or not. Anyway, that's just a comment.
But all I'm trying to establish is for people who are new, you know, who don't spend a lot of time on this and who want to do the right thing and get an electric car just because.
Well, there are a lot of them. Let me tell you, they're all over the place.
Right.
So there are a lot of people doing the right thing from that standpoint.
And so from that standpoint, I'm not certain that, I'm breaking it down by affordability. So if you have one of the less expensive ones, that's okay.
Well, the majority of electric Teslas in Fairfield County, for example, are the Model 3s or the Ys or whatever, which are all lower price than the initial Model S.
I'm sorry, Fairfield County wasn't exactly, you know, the entire demographic I was going
no,
for.
It's
but
not.
But that, Jay, is the point. But someone in that demographic is likely, as Jay says, going to have another car. So we will move. We will move on to the socioeconomic of the aspect. We'll save that for another day. Anyway.
Yes. I just want to bring up a little local news. I don't know if you, Robin and Jill, have heard of the plans that are not only plans. It's happening. The roundabout in Great Barrington. Most of our listeners are familiar with Great Barrington and arriving into Great Barrington, going up.
Where is
7.
It, Jay? I do not know about it.
So
south end,
that
north end, or what end?
That is the south end of Great Barrington. So coming from Canaan or coming from South Egremont on 23, that intersection right there where there is a light now, where
the police station is.
If some or most of our listeners are familiar with that area, there is going to be built within the next 2 years a roundabout. And I think it's great, but a lot of people are already complaining about it. And
well, that's because most people don't know how to do a roundabout.
That's correct.
Well, that was where what I was getting to, and I just think that roundabouts are great. I think it takes some practice to navigate them. I grew up with them in Europe, and when I go back to Europe, it takes me a little while to navigate them as efficiently as other people do. But it is a great way of keeping traffic flowing.
Yes. The one thing they have to do with the Great Barrier one is, because I've watched tractor trailers have to make that left turn, it's almost like a jackknife turn at the light if they want to come up from Route 7 and turn left on 41 South, is to be sure that roundabout, and they will design it that way, so it's not really a concern of mine, but they have to be sure that it is designed that way so that the trucks can go around it without cross-cutting and with the trailer behind. And truckers have to make wide turns to do that, and so they have to have wide turn flexibility in the design so that they will be able to do that kind. And that's the same thing in the reverse direction of coming up 41 or coming over from 23 in New York State and having to make a turn to go south on 7 towards Canaan, for example.
And
that's all in the design, and yes, it will take at least probably a year to do it, and I don't know what the traffic does while it's going on.
And in our final in our final 3 minutes for safety tips, I'm going to start, and then you can all finish if you want, or you can just leave it with this.
Okay.
I don't care how old you are. I don't care what generation you are. Use your turn signal. Any other?
We could beat that to death and still not beat it enough. People are just not using it. I mean, even truckers aren't using it today. I followed one today.
Must have followed the same one.
I always say this, and this is, I'm being facetious, and don't, again.
Listeners, don't get them wrong.
The only place you don't use your turn signals is in Manhattan. Because if you do use your turn signals, somebody will make sure that you do not get to make the move you need to make.
That's fair.
Okay.
But that's the only exception, okay? Other than that, Jill is right. Use your turn signals.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.